We'll call a meeting of the Agriculture and Rural Development Policy and Finance Committee to order. Evidently, some are not back from our week-long Easter recess yet, but we'll proceed anyway, and we believe we have enough to hold some votes on these bills. Good to see those that are here with us this morning. On a gray day here in the metro, we have three bills on tap. Has Representative Vogel had a chance to peruse the minutes yet, and would he approve those if he has done so?
Yes, I have, Mr. Chair, and I so move.
Very good. Thanks, Representative. And you also are first up this morning. We have House File 516, which pertains to removing certain animal control mandates with Representative Vogel from Candiohi County. Good morning, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 516, and I'm not even sure where this is going. If this is going to the, do you know Linda?
Okay, it looks like it's going to be going to public safety after
public safety
here.
From here. All right. I'd like to move 516 to be recommended to pass and then refer to public safety.
Go ahead, Representative.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is basically just a mandate relief bill in that what we are looking to do is to give a little more control back to the local authorities talking about impounding animals that they... The current statute says that they shall seize and impound and restrain, you know, any dog which has no license. And we're just going to give them the authority to and change it to they may seize and impound, that they don't have to. Because of what the impact it has on some of the smaller communities and things like that. So... It's basically just a couple of word changes in two spots there where we're changing it to must. They must enforce the animal control authorities, law agencies on page 2, but and on page 1 that they may seize and impound. And then also that does repeal four other sections relating to the impounding and the sale of these animals. With that, Mr. Chair, there is no fiscal impact according to what I have here on the note. So with that, I think that's all I have. And I don't have any testifiers, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for members? We do have a couple of testifiers.
Okay.
Any questions from members of the committee? Representative Poppin.
Thank you, Chair Anderson. I just have a question, a couple of questions probably. One is, according to the House Research Bill summary, it says that this eliminates the requirement that when a county elects to license dogs, and I'm just wondering how many counties in the state actually do license dogs?
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Poppy, that is a good question, and I don't have that number. Of counties that do. I don't know for sure. I know that many of the outstate ones don't.
Representative?
Cities do, but some cities require license, but I don't know about counties.
Representative Poppy.
Okay, Mr. Chair. All right. I know that we're mostly made up of rural members, and we maybe have, I certainly know that there. I have some small towns that there seems to be a good number of dogs in some of the little towns, and I'm just wondering about the difference between rural Minnesota, greater Minnesota, and the metropolitan area as far as the impact of this. And so maybe there will be some testifiers to talk about that, but certainly I understand, Representative Vogel, you want to eliminate some mandates, but I'm also a bit concerned about public safety. And certainly in different parts of the state, we might have different views of what we'd like to see done with dogs running loose. So Just if you have any comments, but otherwise, if there's probably somebody from either AMC or other areas that maybe would speak about that.
Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Poppe. Again, I agree. I know that, like you say, most of us in rural Minnesota probably don't have to deal with these issues. But the thing is that this this bill doesn't say that they can, that they don't have to do this. This gives them the option to, whether a local city or, you know, the county or whatever, gives them the option to change that. Doesn't say that they have to, and that they can quit, that they have to quit doing this. I think that it still gives the city or the county the authority to continue to seize and hold if that's what they choose, but it gives that authority back to them. And you know, for those larger cities, I'm sure that they'll probably continue to do that. They have enforcement, you know, animal enforcement officers, and you know, so they'll continue to do that if they so choose. But this just takes that mandate away for all, you know, that they all have to at this point.
Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm going off the bill summary, and I'm sure it's accurate, but there's a, it repeals, eliminates the laws that require a person who purchases an unclaimed seized animal to keep the animal for at least 2 months. And I'm just wondering about, again, if you've lost your puppy and now you are, you know, trying to find where it is, and somebody has otherwise found it or purchased it or, you know, collected it or whatever, and destroys it, is there any recourse for the person who then lost their puppy? What are kind of the consequences to all of the things that you'll be eliminating or changing with this?
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppe. Certainly there may be some impact to pet owners, and maybe a part of this might be that it puts more responsibility on them to watch over their pets a little more closely, you know. And I guess that's probably one effect that might be an effect. Yes, there could be the chance that if they lose their pet, that it may be, you know, whether if it's sold and somebody else buys it, that they may not get it back. Because that person has to hold it for 2 months, wouldn't have to hold it for 2 months now. But again, I think it goes back to the personal responsibility of, if you're going to own a pet and have pets, you should be responsible to watch over that pet and not let it run around, run free. And, you know, if your pet is lost, and, you know, there may be consequences. I know, I understand. There's always consequences to our lack of action or actions. But I understand that there are testifiers, Mr. Chair, and I'd be glad to have some of them come up.
Okay, we have a question again from the committee, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vogel, thank you for bringing this forward. Can you tell me, I have what's called Heartland Animal Rescue Team in my district. They do a remarkable job with animals that are, you know, running loose or whatever. Can you tell me, and I know that there's, in the state, there are several animal rescue kind of entities around the state. Do they, have they weighed in on this? Where did this come from? Have those animal rescue teams or agencies weighed in on this?
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Ward. I have I believe yesterday I did receive an email from one of the agencies, the CAT, where they rescue cats, and actually large cats like tigers and stuff like that. So those are larger cats, you know. But that they do rescue that, and they weren't necessarily in favor of this bill because of some of the, you know, relieving some of the mandates on some of this and taking that away. They believe that this may lead to more breeding of people who would have those large pets, and that they maybe would breed more of them. But then again, who knows? But it again, it doesn't take away the option of whether of those shelters or those places of being there. Doesn't take away the opportunity for those places to exist and for even for local law enforcements to continue to seize and impound the pets. Just says that they may instead of shall.
Representative Ward.
Okay, so thank you for that explanation. And then this, as you has mentioned a couple times, mandate relief kind of thing. Do you know what how much it's going to save cities, townships, the state, the counties, at all?
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair and Representative Ward, I was just looking at the physical note here. Doesn't show the savings that it might have. Just states that there is no physical impact as far as that goes. I would assume it would save some if they don't have to hire an officer or have an officer on duty all the time, or you know, if a city chose to relieve some of this.
But Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is about, again, the idea of a mandate is something that everybody has to adhere to, and there's a reason, apparently, that this was determined that it made sense to do statewide and to have a mandate that affected everyone similarly throughout the state. I'm wondering how this, if this were enacted, certainly loose cats and dogs don't necessarily know where a county line ends or a city, district is or whatever, and how it would directly impact local communities and townships, cities, counties, if one county does enact something and the next county doesn't. Would that put a greater burden on one of the counties versus the other? It just, I guess mandates can be a bad thing, or they can be useful in the fact that they add fairness throughout the state. So if you could just talk a little bit about how you're going to make sure that there isn't an unequal burden to one or the other of our local units of government.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Poppy. It's a good question, and you know, I think we'd have to have some communication between adjoining counties or cities and in working this out. I guess that as far as if a city is going to keep it enforced or a county is going to keep it enforced, but also I believe that sometimes these mandates that are put on for an entire state don't necessarily benefit the entire state, you know, in a sense where we're making certain requirements. And again, sometimes laws are put in place because of a certain few who think that this would be good. But is it good for the whole state? You know, that remains to be seen. It may be good for certain areas, and but in other areas it may not be beneficial. It's costly, very costly in some areas. I understand that.
We have some public testimony, but before we take that, we had miscounted and didn't have a quorum when we approved the minutes. So, Representative Poppy, would you let's go back and would you approve the minutes of our last meeting?
Yes.
Thank you, Representative. And Representative Vogel, would you introduce your bill one more time for possible passage?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move House File 516 to be passed and referred to public safety.
Thanks, Representative. Okay, now we have our public testimony from President of the Minnesota Animal Control Association, if he is in the audience. And a couple others, if you would be ready to step on down as well. Thank you, sir, and introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning, Chairman. Good morning, Representatives. My name is Tom Mahan. I am the current president of the Minnesota Animal Control Association. I am also the animal control officer for the Police Department of the City of New Hope. And I wanted to speak to two sections of the proposed legislation. First, it falls under the dangerous dog registration requirements, Chapter 347, where we are changing, proposed now changing the words that law enforcement and animal control agencies may do the registration of dangerous animals from shall. The Minnesota Animal Control Association is opposed to changing this. This has been in effect for a while, and it has been a very effective tool to identifying and regulating dangerous dogs statewide. In outstate, many areas do not have their own ordinances or city rules that regulate dangerous animals, so the fallback is the Chapter 347 for registering the animals. And again, we do stand opposed to the proposed language change. Unfortunately, we can't count on counties to pass their own registration. So that's why it's necessary to still have the statewide law. It is a huge public safety issue. These animals, if they are to be moved from that area where they first were acting aggressively and had not been labeled as aggressive there and now are moved to a new area, it's almost as if we're starting over again from the first incident that the animals are involved in. I've been doing this job for 15 years, and I've had to deal with over 80 dangerous dogs, or potentially dangerous dogs. I've labeled as potentially dangerous. Of those 80 or so, I've only had to carry forward to the dangerous dog level, which is the next step up, on 8 of those animals. So the owners that kept all the other animals seemed to get the word that this was a very serious issue, and they did not allow their animals to get into any kind of trouble after that. So that section should remain is that law enforcement and animal control. So authorities shall continue to regulate these animals. Another section dealing with the reporting of registered exotic animals to the Board of Animal Health, which is under sub 9 of Chapter 346, which would proposed language would remove using the Board of Animal Health as our central clearinghouse for registering these animals. It's very important that we do keep a central location statewide when dealing with these potentially dangerous exotic animals. Authorities need to know if these animals are being housed legally and humanely, and it would be a patchwork if it was left up to local jurisdictions to just keep track of it. It's important that we're able to go to a central location such as the Board of Animal Health and find out if the animals are properly registered and identify who the owners are, who any previous owners may have been, so that we can track these animals. Thank you.
I have a question from Representative Anderson. Bruce.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Mr. Mann, what happens if at present now, if you call in a stray dog on your property to the local officials? I live in a county, I live in a township, I don't necessarily know, except that there is a no dog ordinance. That means there's supposedly not a dog supposed to be running around on your property. You call somebody, official, a county sheriff, two seconds later, the dog's gone. You see it repeatedly come up. What's the local officials supposed to do in this situation? I mean, or is it better for the property owner to take action on his own?
Mr. Well, certainly it does fall back to owner responsibility. Depending on what the animal might be doing, if it's just wandering around and not being aggressive, law enforcement could inform the owner of the leash law, if there is one, and that they do have to keep the animal from leaving their property and becoming a nuisance, becoming aggressive, getting into traffic, causing a traffic accident. It would be incumbent on the agency that has the law to at least inform the owner that they are in violation, and then follow up with that with further warnings or citations.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Mann, what happens if you don't know who the owner is?
Well,
Mr.
it's difficult, Mr. Anderson. If the animal is captured, we do have the requirement that we hold the animal at our impound facilities for 5 days and hope that the owner comes forward after that. We have to make a reasonable effort to locate the owner, either checking a list of people who have reported their animal lost or checking for a microchip. Or certainly the easiest way would be checking for a license. That's the quickest way, the quickest ticket home for that animal is proper identification on it.
Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Mann, who inevitably pays for the services of the law enforcement to do this job?
Mr. Mann.
Mr. Anderson, it does come from tax dollars paying for the law enforcement portion of it. In my jurisdiction, if we when we identify the owner, we do expect them to cover our costs for doing that, for picking up and housing their animal, till which time they come and retrieve it.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson.
In my situation, where I'm very close to the cities, even though I'm in a township situation, you can call deputy sheriffs night, noon, or day. To have someone come out and try and find this particular animal that's on your property, and they basically say they can't, they haven't got the expertise or the people to expend to do that, and to put a person in the field with the economy the way it is right now, it's just not possible.
Mr. Mahan?
Mr. Anderson, we certainly do understand that. There are degrees of importance for stray animals. Again, those that are causing more trouble do need to be dealt with accordingly. In my area, we see it as a public nuisance. Again, busy streets, children, a lot of children in the area with stray dog, even if they're not aggressive, still causing problems or causing a perceived problem by the caller. So we do act accordingly and identify the owner as best we can and hold them responsible for what their dogs have done.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mann, I was listening to your testimony, and were you saying that the dangerous dog provision here going from the Shell to May would create dangerous dog dumping grounds where people would move their animals? If, let's say there's a super ruthless pit bull that no longer can be maintained in a county that would have a local ordinance, and then they'd move it out, and there'd be dumping grounds where people would take their dangerous animals.
That
could that could be a potential result of that. If they know there are areas that they don't have to worry about registering their animal, that is a potential problem.
Mr. Representative Hansen?
Yep, Mr. Chair. And a follow-up, Mr. Mann, and you work with the association, and the author bill talked about mandates, and have you had anybody saying that this is an onerous mandate, that this needs to be repealed? Repeal is not reform. I mean, we keep getting these repealer bills that are shown as reform, but is there any evidence that says that we need to repeal or change these provisions?
Mr. Mahan.
Mr. Hansen, I do not believe there's any indication that we have to.
Representative Vogel, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do. You know, this bill does not say that the animals don't have to be licensed. Okay? This bill simply says that the sheriff and sheriff's deputies or police or other police officers may seize and impound or restrain any dog for which no license has been issued. So it's not saying that these animals still don't have to be licensed. It's just saying that for the sheriff department, as Representative Anderson points out, and I come out in our area, rural Minnesota, that the burden of falling on them to try to seize a dog that's running out in the wild that may not have a license or may have a license, they don't have to seize that dog. They may try to seize it if they wish, but they don't have to do that. It doesn't say that that they don't have to be licensed anymore. It's still up to the local authorities. Okay, and You know, so that's basically what this is doing. It's not taking away the fact that people have to still, if the local government unit wants to have, you know, have everything licensed, all the pets licensed, still states that they still need to be done. Then.
Representative Hansen.
Sure, but if the local government doesn't want to do it, it's not done. Therefore, it's not going to happen.
We have more public testimony. Were you completed, Mr. Mann?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there an Elaine Hansen? Welcome to our committee, and identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, representatives. I'm Elaine Hansen. I'm with the Minnesota Cat and Dog Council. I don't have detailed testimony to give you today. I just want to let you know that the council is generally in support of changing laws or passing laws that give appropriate local control to communities and do not have unfunded mandates such as the one in the statute as it currently exists. And this is possibly a bill that may need a bit of tinkering here and there based on what's been said so far today. But generally speaking, we support not having unfunded mandates and not having statewide control over what happens in every local community. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Hansen. Any questions, Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you just describe the Cat and Dog Council and who you represent, and are you a statewide organization, and are you funded in any certain way? And I'm just curious about who you really, you know, who you represent and who you are.
Ms. Hansen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppy, the Minnesota Cat and Dog Council has been in existence since approximately 1990 and has had other names as it's gone along. I've been involved with the group for a little over 3 years now, and it's been known as the Minnesota Council of Dog Clubs, and that was abandoned because cat fanciers were interested in the same things that dog clubs were. It also was briefly known as the Minnesota Responsible Animal Owners Association. That name, which you may still see now and then, was abandoned because it's too much of a mouthful. Dog and cat fanciers generally belong to clubs, kennel clubs and breed clubs and performance clubs that put on events and encourage the responsible and reputable breeding of animals and keeping of animals. And I'm sorry I can't give you any kind of number as to who we represent. I can tell you that there are 12 all-breed kennel clubs, probably two dozen performance and trial clubs, and most likely in the neighborhood of 40 to 50 specialty breed clubs that where the members are just involved with a single breed. Does that help you?
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I have a dog and two cats, and I've not heard of you before, so I'm just wondering, would somebody who just kind of has a mutt and two kitties, would I be interested in your council, and would I, do you pay a membership fee, or, I mean, I don't have a all purebred anything, so I'm just wondering about how I would find out about you.
Ms. Hansen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Poppy, you would have some difficulty finding out about us. We have been trying to reorganize and expand our horizons over the last couple of years. We are primarily involved in legislation. We don't put on any events or membership activities. Anyone who is concerned about legislation affecting the ownership and keeping of animals would be welcome. Having a purebred is absolutely not a requirement.
Any further questions for Ms. Hansen? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Also have a Dan, and I apologize here, Nikozalek. welcome to the committee, and identify yourself with correct pronunciation of your name, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's Dan Nijalik, a common, yeah, not exactly a common, easy spelling one. I'm also, I'm manager of Minneapolis Animal Care and Control, the Animal Control Authority for the City of Minneapolis. We are also a member of MACA, the Minnesota's Animal Control Association, and in representing, I want to speak in specifically in opposition to the section dealing with dangerous animals, and that is 347.565, with the proposed change moving from must to may. I've managed Minneapolis Animal Care and Control for the past 4 years. Also in my life, I've been with the Minneapolis Police Department as a crime prevention specialist for 8 years, working on neighborhood livability and safety issues. I believe this small change will have a public safety impact on the state of Minnesota. This law doesn't dictate, except for a baseline level of public safety. It sets a standard, I think, is very baseline for the entire state. It does not preclude any local authority from doing more. The City of Minneapolis's dangerous animal ordinance is substantially more strict in regards to how we deal with aggressive animals in the City of Minneapolis. So this statute doesn't preclude local authorities from doing what they want, but it sets a very, what I consider a fairly low baseline of public safety for the entire state. We are talking about dogs that have inflicted substantial bodily harm on a human being on public or private property, has killed a domestic animal without provocation, and had been found previously aggressive and declared potentially dangerous, and then had substantial issues. So we're talking about aggressive and dangerous animals in the state. One of the concerns for has been raised about the moving of dogs. We have a very strict ordinance in regards to declaring animals potentially dangerous as well as dangerous, more strict than the state statute. What we see is when we declare an animal, a number of people move and take their animal with them. We do the job of notifying that local jurisdiction that that dog is being moved into their jurisdiction. My concern, because under 347.52, which is something that will be impacted by this change, is subsection B, an owner of a dangerous dog must renew the registration of the dog annually. If the dog is removed from the jurisdiction, it must be registered as a dangerous dog in its new jurisdiction. So if the local authority doesn't declare a dog in one jurisdiction, that dog can clearly be moved into another jurisdiction, and we would not be knowledgeable, which has a public safety impact on our entire state. Granted, we are, you know, the largest city. We see more people, dog interactions, and problems that way, but it is a statewide issue and has tragic impacts, whether it be we've had a little boy killed 7 years ago, and then we had a letter carrier seriously attacked last year. None of those dogs are currently on the street anymore, but there are other dogs out there. We ask that you consider the impact on public safety in regards to that change. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for the testifier? Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This actually isn't a question. I'm just going to follow up on what the testifier was just talking about. Mr. Chair, in a previous life, I was a defense attorney, and we had a series of cases involving pit bull maulings of small children. And talk about some of the most trying, difficult cases I had to deal with, and certainly devastating for the families. And so I tend to agree with you that I would want to tread carefully. And so, Mr. Chair, I do have a question for Representative Vogel. Representative Vogel, is this bill going to be going to local government operations as well?
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair, at this point, I was not aware of that. It was going to public safety. From here, but and I don't know that it had been called for in the government ops.
Representative.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Vogel, I guess I would strongly argue this needs to go to government operations as well, given the interplay. I'm not crazy about legislation that is permissive. I think we had this discussion, Representative Vogel, in the Higher Education Committee, where we passed a whole bunch of bills which said that the MNSCU could or is allowed to do things, and now this is somewhat similar, but I would prefer to leave that to the Government Operations Committee, which has a greater experience in that area, to have them decide that. And Mr. Chair, if I may ask one more question.
Go ahead, Representative Morrill.
And Representative Vogel, I'm sorry I walked in late at a previous meeting. Is there a Senate companion to this bill?
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, at this point, I don't believe we have one yet. We're still searching for somebody over there. So, thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, you were talking about dogs. And I was just trying to jog my memory here. I seem to remember maybe it was down in Representative Poppy's area, there were some tigers a few years ago, and there have been maulings. And so in the city of Minneapolis, let's move away from the dogs. Let's get to lions and tigers and things with big claws. And so going from shall to may or must to may, right now I'm assuming are there any tigers in backyards in Minneapolis?
Committee member, not that we're aware of, and hopefully not.
And Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, but if this bill passed, the city of Minneapolis could become, they could say, we just don't want this mandate anymore. We don't have to have this reporting for exotic animals. You wouldn't know, would you, if you were called out on something and surprised there's a tiger in the backyard with removing these requirements. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, committee members, there is the potential then for, since there is no state database for animals to be moved around, and it's like anything else, the more information out there about it. And exotics can be very dangerous. A lot of times they seem very cute, but they can have significant injury potential. But that's where a statewide level, one thing, this is a baseline public safety we're talking about. Local jurisdictions can go more deeper in terms of the regulation, but from a baseline, I think what's in law right now provides a nice safety net.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, so let's take it out of Minneapolis. Let's go back to Representative Poppy's area, and a sheriff gets called out to something happened in the backyard, and there's no reporting, and surprise, they turn around the corner and here's a tiger on the loose or that's got out. And they, without the reporting, they don't know. You have public safety officials put in harm's way because the repeal of this reporting requirement, they don't have the knowledge on a statewide level. Critters could get moved when they're cute and young or when they're big and dangerous. You could have law enforcement walking in or just the neighbor walking in without reporting if this bill passes.
Mr. Chair, committee member, I'm not going to really speak out, say it. I don't want to stretch my expertise that way, but I think you raised some real good questions in regards to knowledge of what is out there and exposure of people walking into situations.
Any further questions? Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, with some of the, regarding some of this testimony, at this point, I think maybe I'd...
We have one further public testimony.
Okay. I think they're lined up there.
Okay. They weren't on the list here, so my apologies for that.
All right.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Sulom with the Minnesota Association of Townships. And I hadn't intended to testify, that I wasn't on the list, but I just, in light of some of the questions and comments being made, felt that I should talk about some of the potential impact. We do not have a position on this bill. We're not here to oppose it or support it. But particularly some of the questions that Representative Poppy had raised. First of all, I think there's a lot of confusion as to who's really in charge of animals. And part of that came about because of the 2008 amendment where the change to local animal control authority. That term is not defined anywhere in statute. There's a lot of assumptions on it, but it's a term that's without meaning as far as statute. And I get a number of calls about what to do with stray animals, dogs, etc. And at the township level, unless the voters specifically act, the township cannot be the local control authority for animals. There has to be specific action at the March annual meeting to vest the board with that authority. So we have to tell our folks when the calls come in, well, you really don't have this power. Call the county. When it's just an animal running at large, such as the dogs under Section 1, more often than not, the response is, well, we're not dealing with that anymore. So I think Section 1, changing it to May, would just reflect current reality. That would create the flexibility of, you know, we have the power, but it's not our top priority. But those are not the dangerous animals that are being addressed. Under Section 2, the response I've had when I've talked to the county sheriffs is, yes, we still will be the authority. We recognize that in the rural areas, most of the, you know, if you really want a town board member out there trying to deal with a dangerous dog or other dangerous animals, they don't have the training, they don't have the experience. So at that point, we are very dependent on the county sheriff. Changing it to May, certainly gives the county some relief, but it leaves us with the ambiguity of who's out there. So again, I'm not trying to be for or against, but just explaining the potential impact. Section 1 probably creates reality of what exists. Section 2 definitely would shift, would anybody take control? My guess is in most situations when you've got a real threat, they're still going to respond. They're still going to say, hey, we've got a true safety need here, and we're going to respond. On some of the borderline cases, I don't know what to tell you, but I just wanted to tell you what the calls and the experience we've had to understand that there's a difference between Section 1 and Section 2 of the bill.
Any questions? If not, thank you for your testimony, Mr. Sola. Any other public testimony? Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greta Gothier, and I am representing the Board of Animal Health. I apologize for not signing up ahead of time. I didn't confess I did not read through all the repealers, but the only questions, and I'm not here to testify for or against, but a question about the last repealer there that repeals 346.155 about the reporting requirement for regulated animals that might be registered with a local animal control authority. Just a question, do we know, was there an intention to have some other agency receive that information? It's not, from what I understand, it's not critical that the Board of Animal Health receives it, but at the same time, we get a lot of requests for information about where these animals are located and who has had contact with them, et cetera. So from that standpoint, it would make it difficult to answer those questions.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gothier, when you do get the information of from across the state or the cities or wherever it might be, other than just documentation of that, is there anything else that is done with that information except to keep it on record with you at the state level? Is there anything that you then, do you send out to the local law enforcement, or do you have contact with them to let them know that your area in Beltrami County or in Traverse County or wherever that might be, you let them know that there's a potential of dangerous animals in that area? Or what do you do with that information that supposedly now is potentially a repealer?
Mr. Gothier, Ms. Gothier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Anderson, I don't know the answer to your question. I can get that information for you, but as I understand it, it is something that we receive a lot of inquiries about. I'm not aware that I can check into whether or not there's a report compiled or communication otherwise to local public safety authorities.
Any further questions? If not, thank you, Ms. Gothier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vogel? Any more public testimony? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would request a roll call.
Representative Vogel.
Mr. Chair, in light of some of these things that have come forward, I think I'd like to just lay this over and maybe work with a couple of these people and tweak this a little bit. Maybe we can make this a little better.
Okay. I think that's all right. Fair. We're going to hold this bill over. Thank you. Moving on, we have House File 1263, I believe. Welcome, Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative, I would move your bill.
Okay. Just a way to introduce the bill. I think we're all back from Passover and Easter break and probably looked in our garages and figure out there needs to be some house cleaning done shortly. I think that's really what this bill is. It was given to me to carry by Senator Carlson and Senator Scoy in the Senate. And what it really does, I think, is just repeal
Mr.
some
Chair.
Obsolete.
Representative.
I apologize for interrupting, but what is the motion before us?
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Hancock, the motion is to have this held over for possible inclusion in the ag policy bill.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Representative.
What this basically does, there was a law in 1917 that allowed and authorized counties to lend money to qualifying residents who had suffered from a partial or total crop failure. And I think this is something that is just that. It's house cleaning to take some obsolete laws off the books.
Any questions from members? Representative Fall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Being that I wasn't around in 1917, and I don't know if any of us were, I don't know the history of how often this program was used or the reason for which it was brought forward, but do we have any type of analysis that shows when the program was used and what capacity? Do we know if anybody currently uses it, if it's this language allows for the leveraging of additional funds? Do we have any idea of just making sure there aren't unintended consequences by doing? I was looking through the repealers, and I see that there's a number of sections of statute that are repealed, and tried to get through those as quickly as possible, but just I think we have to have a little bit of a background information about if this program has been used at all in recent history.
Representative Hancock, do you have any information on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not quite that old either, although I might be older than most here.
I was wrong. 70s or 17? Was it 17?
17. Okay. I don't know of any recent history, to be honest. I don't know who has brought the bill forward. Like I said, it was jacketed to me from the Senate. Being that Senator Scoy is a farmer and Senator Carlson's in my district, it may well have come from that area. To me, it if I were a county in county government, I think I would be, the reason it's probably been overlooked is that it authorizes the county to do this. It doesn't mandate it. It doesn't say that it's an integral part of the farming or agricultural industry, and I think it's probably just been overlooked for a number of years. Perhaps Mr. Sullivan, in researching it, could provide a little history to that. I'm not sure.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, I don't know of any use of this law, given its date and given some of the provisions that, for instance, require the loan to be paid back at a fixed rate of 6%. Typically, when we see laws, for instance, the Rural Finance Authority, they have the authority to change their interest rate based on current market conditions. This is locked in right at 6%. It requires a lien against the crops. So just based on the provisions and the date of the law, I don't believe that this is used, but I don't know for sure.
Any further questions, Representative Fall? Any other questions from members or from the public on House File 1263? If not, all those in favor of... Yeah, for possible inclusion. Okay. Okay. My
Thank
apologies
you, Mr.
again. Thanks, Representative. Okay. Is Representative... We had one more bill on the agenda for today, but I don't see Representative Grunhagen here. Let's hang on for a second. And that bill had to do with the Commissioner of Corrections... in a gardening program at State Correctional.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morrow.
Does this committee meet again this week?
Yes, it does.
Mr. Chair, might I suggest, if we don't see Representative Grunhagen in a couple minutes, that we hear his bill at the next hearing rather than wait? Yep. I know that, at least on our side, we have caucus coming up here.
Okay. We'll give him another minute. Five, okay.